Hey there, Weird Ones. This is Herman coming at you at the end of 2021 here with our Into the Weird post-Christmas special. Now, what does this entail? Well, as you might remember on previous episodes of Into the Weird, Billy and I have teased that we might drop this in and around Christmas time. It was supposed to drop on Christmas Day, but because life got in the way as usual, I'm a bit late and I apologize for that, but that's why I've called this a post-Christmas special after all. So hopefully it'll float your boat this fine New Year's Eve, which is when it's going to be dropping. And what is it exactly? Well, this is a snippet taken from one of our Into the Weird shows over on our Patreon, which is at patreon.com/Into the Weird. And there we do three shows: House of Licensed Ideas, Radio Free Iboria, and of course Dragons and Jive. Now, this segment is taken from Dragons and Jive, where we discuss a character whose catchphrase has something to do with Christmas. And for you Marvel stalwarts out there, you Bronze Age fanatics, you will definitely recognize this character just by the mention of his catchphrase. So we're going to insert that right now. But first off, I'd like to thank all of you for supporting us over the last 3.5 years. Into the Weird loves you all. And at the end of the show, I'll give a shout out to our patrons who made this segment possible. So without further preamble, here it is. A snippet from Dragons and Jive, Episode 7, which dropped in the beginning of December, now available to all you weirdos listening to Into the Weird out there. With that, I'd like to wish you all a Happy New Year. Stay safe, everybody. Cheerio.
Welcome to Dragons and Jive, episode number 7. I'm here with my buddy, the street-talking Herman Lowe. How are you, buddy?
Sweet Christmas, Billy. I'm doing really well. And this is sweet Christmas, yeah.
Yeah, technically, this is our Christmas Patreons here, December, yep.
That's right, and this one particularly has a Christmas theme when we get to the Luke Cage issue. So let's take this opportunity to wish our patrons a Merry Christmas, and I hope you all get some fantastic comic-related gifts this year. Yeah. And why not show it off to us on Twitter?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Let us know. Yeah, and hit up the Into the Weird account and definitely show us what you got. Absolutely.
Yeah, that would be amazing. We'll post some of our, you know, Christmas scratch maybe on Patreon, on the Patreon site, and then you guys can see what we got. I just showed off some stuff to you, right, Mr. B? my wife allowed me to open my Christmas prezzies 3 weeks earlier. So I'm pretty chuffed
lucky
with
that. Dog.
Yeah, man.
Lucky dog.
But otherwise, yeah, this is the recording that would drop at the beginning of Christmas, you know, of December. But we're going to wish you guys a merry one right off the get-go, because after all, the next time you'll be listening to us would be episode 8, which is going to drop after the new year. So yeah, hope you all stay safe and have a fun time, be with family and enjoy yourselves. We could have also gone the birthday angle, right, Billy? Because one of the characters we're going to be talking about has a birthday, which is celebrated by another character as his death day, which is pretty cruel.
Crazy.
Considering that's his dad.
Oh, yeah. What else is new, though, for that?
That's right. There's nothing new for old Shang-Chi there. But, yeah, he's not celebrating anything. But Luke, he gets lucky in the snow there.
Him and his lady... if it wasn't for a cop, it would have done the deed. Who knows?
Yeah, definitely. And of course, old Iron Fist too. He meets the love of his life, which we teased in the previous Patreon episode 6 of Dragons and Jive. But we'll get to that. We're jumping the gun here. But Billy, can you introduce the three issues we'll be talking about here? What are we specifically going to discuss?
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about Master of Kung Fu, Giant Size Number One. That's a pack full of crazy stories and you know, some extras and things like that that are awful fun. I really enjoyed checking this one out. And then Marvel Premiere 21, you know, that has our buddy Iron Fist in it. And that's a kooky story, too. You know, we see our buddy for one or two pages there, Batroc Zidley Bear. You know, he exits stage left, but, you know, there's plenty more fun even with him jumping out of the book there. And then Hero for Hire number 7, you know, which is, like you said, it's a crazy Luke Cage story, and it's a Christmas story as well. So, you know, good to go here.
Appropriate. And we didn't plan it like this. We didn't time it.
No.
Consciously, this is all just happenstance. So we were lucky that we got at least one Christmas-themed comic for our Patreon. But we'll have a Christmas-themed episode out on Into the Weird. Never you fear.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say it now. The Shang-Chi issues were fantastic. Great. Almost incomparably so. But this next comic that we're going to be discussing is my ultimate favorite of the bunch. Luke Cage having a sweet Christmas. Okay, let's talk details first, and then you hit it off with the synopsis. Okay, Luke Cage, Hero for Hire, number 7, cover dated March 1973, on sale December the 12th, 1972, just in time for Christmas. Cover price, 20 cents, page count, 32, edited by Roy Thomas again. Cover art by Billy Graham. Title, Jingle Bombs. that's a great title. And of course, it's written by our man Steve, Mr. Englehart. Penciled by George Tuska, inked by Billy Graham, and lettered by John Constanza with colors by Dave Hunt. And of course, the Shang-Chi that we discussed earlier, you can find in an epic collection, the first one of Shang-Chi called Weapon of the Soul. The Luke Cage issue now that we're talking about can also be found in the first Luke Cage collection called Retribution, also an epic collection. Or you can read that in the Luke Cage Masterworks too. But they're all available these days, which is great if you don't just want to read them digitally on the Marvel app. And then, Billy, this cover, before we... Let's do the synopsis first and then talk cover.
Okay.
What do you think? Okay, so you're up, Mr. B. What's your synopsis for Luke Cage, number 7?
It's Christmas Eve, and Luke Cage aims to take his lady out and then head home for some holiday cheer. There's only one problem. A madman with super strength, also a master of disguise, and an atom bomb at his fingertips is in his way.
Excellent, which is all accurate. This is as crazy as Luke's Christmas gets. And presumably this is the first Christmas after he turned super. So
yeah.
A memorable one indeed for a superhero in New York.
Yeah.
All right. So mine goes as follows. After necking with Claire in the snow on Christmas Eve, Luke takes on a modern day terrorist of Christmas past, present, and future, and beats the dickens out of him, saving New York from nuclear Armageddon in the process. I put a bit of a literary spin on that, Mr. B, because after all, this is a heavily inspired Charles Dickens issue.
Yeah, I mean, you got a cover here, you know, that we're going to talk about, and it doesn't exactly, you know, go down like this, but I wouldn't say it's a bait and switch. This is close. Fairly accurate.
This is like what would happen in the multiverse in one of the many universes. What if Luke Cage did not stop the ghost of Christmas future? This is basically a what if tale. That's what the cover presents, at least. Merry Christmas, world, says this terrorist, and goodbye. And the button just says destruct that he's pressing.
And it's facing the wrong way, too, by the way, the destruct button. Exactly. It's the word destruct is the reader. It's facing the reader.
And isn't it funny that this villain, right? Luke Cage is in this villain's lair. He's got a bird's eye view of Manhattan here. Well, almost.
Yeah.
And then you've got this little miniature Christmas tree on top of a fireplace, obviously belonging to this terrorist.
Maniac,
snaps the chains, but he's too late. There's a mushroom cloud blooming in Manhattan. Oh, it's great. But Billy, then we start with this classic logo here. On the interior page, Jingle Bombs. I love the way that's been designed by presumably David Hunt and John Constanza, Jingle Bombs. And we cut to the clinic where Luke is visiting Claire, and Doc Bernstein's just about ready to close up. He's got a final patient that he's seeing too. Looks like Pagliacci the clown. That's this guy that he's doctoring. I mean, without his clown suit on, obviously. But Luke has just come over to visit Claire. He calls her his woman.
Yep.
Or his girl. And then he sees through the window of the clinic this Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde scenario with this guy dressed in this top hat and coat from the 19th century, seemingly beating up this kid with a cane.
Yeah, dude's beating on a kid out there, and he goes flying out after him.
Exactly, and it turns out to be good old Jacob Marley, or so this guy says he is. And Luke, man, look at that slap he winds up for this guy. Obviously, he hates people beating up kids, so he winds up for a massive slap, and he plants one on this guy's cheek. But this guy's tougher than most. He retaliates with his solid oak cane, whacks Luke in the face. But nothing happens. Now, I love this bit, Billy. After this Jacob Marley-esque figure whacks Luke with his cane, he says, "Have a touch of my cane, churl." And Luke says, "Well, I've had it, sweetheart. Now watch your action." Good Lord, man.
The look on his face is great.
He can't believe that Luke survived this blow. And then Luke proceeds to punch his cane. Crack. Shakespeare, this blow is enough to kill. Crack. And he smashes this cane. So this guy's suitably surprised, but he obviously, this was kind of like a test, right? But he wanted to see if there's some good left in New York, because he admits that he beat up this kid because the kid asked an exorbitant price for this newspaper. And Luke says, you know, what was the deal? And the guy says, "Nonsense, this he asked 15 cents, and I've never paid 2 cents for a newspaper in my life." More than 2 cents. So he's living in the past. He's living in the Victorian era. Mm-hmm. But this is all just a show that he's putting on. But listen to Luke's cool jive here, Billy. The guy says, "Enough, enough, good sir, I yield." And Luke says, "Dynamite, now sing."
The guy, "Sing?" Gage. And Luke, what's happening here?
Yeah, he translates for him what's happening here.
That's great.
"My name is Marley, sir. Marley, I'm a dealer in chains," referring to the Ghost of Christmas Past there, right? From the classic Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. And then Luke lets him go, and then he leaves. But he says he wants to help the kid. And Luke thinks to himself, "Cats like bat, peanut brittle. All nuts." But it is Christmas Eve. This is amazing. Damn, Steve Englehart is killing it already. And it's only two pages in, right, Mr. B?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, this is great. And then the guy is thinking to himself, well, there are guys who would help somebody in trouble. I'll have to see more of you, Cage, before the city dies.
That's right. So he's already decided on doing his terroristic deed, which is hinted at on the cover, his terrorist deed. But he is still... What would you call it? He's optimistic about one person having the guts to go up against him. So this is sort of like the Red Skull or the Dr. Doom kind of syndrome, where they want someone present to observe the culmination of their master plan.
Their triumph.
Yeah, their triumph. They want someone there to act as a witness. And now this guy's just identified Cage. So he takes the kid into the clinic. And this Chelsea clinic run by Doc Bernstein and Claire. And they take care of the kid. And the kid's called Timmy. Tiny Tim, Billy. Tiny Tim from A Christmas Carol, right? Mm-hmm. God bless us, everyone. That's great. Timmy's got a Christmas present here. But he's poor, right? He's a poor little kid. So also shades of Oliver Twist there. And Claire clocks off. And this is now, but Luke stops her before they head out, because he wants to privately discuss something with Luke. And he talks about Phil Fox, the columnist, the reporter that's been hounding Luke. He's also now interested in doing a story on Doc Bernstein. Now, why is this a problem for Luke, Billy?
Well, because, you know, he thinks then maybe Fox will find out about, you know, Dr. Bernstein's little experiments in the prison, and then that, you know, Cage is that guy that escaped that they think is dead.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why it could be a problem. So he cried off. He said he won't give the interview, Doc Bernstein did, but he says, watch out, watch your back, Luke, because Phil Fox is hunting for you. And then there's this two-page scene. Billy, this is insane. This is crazy, but it's sort of heartfelt too. It puts you in the Christmas mood. Luke and Claire walking through the streets, the snow-covered streets of New York. And at first they have this playful little flirtatious snowball fight. He's chasing Claire through the snow and then pulls an O.J. Simpson on her. Well, hopefully not later O.J. I'm talking about football O.J. by tackling her.
Gotcha, foxy lady. And she says, Cage, you big bully, tackling a girl's no fair.
Cage ain't home, Claire. It's just Luke.
They start making out, and here comes a cop. Ahem.
Yeah. And the cop has also, he's been infused with the Christmas spirit here, because Luke says, no parking zone, officer. And the cop says, no sparking zone. If you're old enough to get that joke. And the cop's smiling. He's letting them go, right, Billy? So I'm endeared to this cop already, because this whole scene is filled with Christmas cheer. Yeah, so what did you think about this sweet bit of Englehart magic?
Oh, I liked it quite a bit. It was nice, because, you know, the rest of the issue is so, like, gonzo crazy. It was a nice, you know, a nice thing to have in there to kind of give it a little, like, lighter moment.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, very heartfelt. So what happens then? We get to the crux of the matter here pretty soon, because we've already seen the ghost, well, the terrorist of Christmas past. Now we're going to see the terrorist of Christmas present in the form of what, Mr. B?
Well, I didn't recognize this guy at first, that it was the same guy, but it's the same guy again. But now he's dressed up like a homeless person, and he says, you know, oh, you know, I'm a vet. And, you know, he starts to act like he's having flashbacks from Vietnam. And Luke's like, whoa, you know, calm down, buddy. You know, it's all over. And the guy, like, really flips out and pulls out a machine gun. And he's like, you're a deserter, Cage, and starts shooting at him. Thank God he has unbreakable skin.
Exactly. Now, it seems to appear that he's legless as well, right, Billy? He's been through some severe bodily injury in Vietnam, but this is all just an act, because we know, in fact, the terrorist is not legless. It's the same guy that showed up before, dressed in Victorian garb. Now, this is the ghost
Jacob
of
Arley.
Christmas present. So this is a very apt present, because at this time that this comic was written, of course, the Vietnam War was still ongoing. It was wrapping up, but it was still basically still
not everybody had come home
Everybody had come home. So this guy, you know, that's another reason why he wants to, well, he says he wants to destroy the world later on. One nuclear bomb's not going to do it, but for him, this is his whole world that he wants to destroy, because this is him railing against the society that would allow the horror of war to still continue. But he's insane. He's completely nuts, this guy.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's crazy.
Like peanut brittle, like Luke describes. So he tries to take out Cage and Claire, and Luke, of course, blocks the bullets, grabbing the gun, and he grabs this vet, crushes the gun, but he doesn't blame the vet. He's firmly seeing that this guy's been driven nuts by the war and by the people who sent him over there, and further affirming that Luke is a good guy in the eyes of this terrorist, making him even more of a nemesis or a foe that this terrorist wants to have. So Luke smashes this gun, and I love the detail on that, Billy. Look, you've got the firing cap flying, you've got the little springs from the triggers.
It's great.
It's great detail there from Tuska and Billy Graham. And then he throws the broken pieces at the vet, and this vet sinisterly smokes the cigarette as Luke walks away with Claire. And then he himself gets up and walks away, showing that he wasn't legless, and he's followed by his laughter, ha ha ha, as he walks down, to obviously his third and final disguise, which he's going to doff, which would be, if you know your Dickens, The Ghost of Christmas Future.
Yeah.
So now this is great. Luke and Claire, they go to a bar, have some drinks. Everybody knows him. Everybody loves him. I mean, even the cops are now, you know, loving Cage because he's helped them out many a time. Everybody loves Cage by now.
Helping the crime, yeah.
He's only been in business for a couple of months. And finally they leave. And then the Ghost of Christmas Future shows up with a laser gun. Billy, what does this guy look like?
Oh my gosh, he's insane. Purple boots, like an orange like suit, a green vest and red belt, red gloves and red hair, a red wig, I guess. He jumps out of nowhere. All right, hold it right there. And Claire's like, Luke, what in the world? And the guy, silence, female, turn with your companion and enter this alley. Exactly. I think he's going to mug them.
It looks like just a regular mugging, but perpetrated by this futuristic supervillain. And now we've got some great dialogue again, Billy. Luke says, what's happening, man? Surely this is a little heavy way to handle a mugging? And the guy says, mugging? No, this is a security check. So his Ghost of Christmas Future is straight out of George Orwell's 1984, Billy. That's how he interprets this future, right? Because he's seeing society heading that way. Maybe that's another reason why he wants to preempt the future by just destroying it now in the present. But this is the future that he sort of wants Cage to see, and the rest of the world too. He says, let me see your identification card and authorization to be on the street. And Luke shows his chops. He did a lot of reading in prison, right? He recognizes this is straight out of 1984. And then Luke, after he hears that this guy's got a laser, he starts to worry for Claire, because maybe even his invulnerable hide can't do anything against the laser, right? We've seen that in the past, that could hurt Luke. Yeah. And so he fears for Claire. Luke tackles this guy, but this guy seems to be super strong as well, right, Billy? Because with one blow, he sort of lays Luke out a little bit there. He's dizzy. Now, Luke retaliates by slapping him again in the face. I don't know why Luke's slap happy during these issues, but the guy has even a laser built into his wrist guard. Mm-hmm. And he almost blasts Luke. Now, look at the fearful expression on Luke's face there as that laser almost wings him. It's like, holy moly.
Yeah, he looks scared, and then he tackles him, and you see somebody looking from a window up above.
Oh, yeah. This is almost reminiscent of that Kitty Genovese incident in New York, right, Billy, where, you know, that famous murder that happened in the 1960s, was it, or early 1970s in New York? Or no, it might have been 1950s, I'm not sure, but where this woman was murdered in an alley in New York, and then bystanders just, or people just, you know, rubberneckers just looked out of their windows and didn't even call the cops. They just sadistically watch this murder being performed. It's horrible. And then, you know, he throws this guy through this wooden fencing, and then churl. This guy loves to use that insult, churl. Billy, I don't know about you. Have you ever read The Death of Karate Kid in the Legion of Superheroes during the Baxter era?
No.
Written by, of course, Keith Giffen and Steve Lytle on art. There, there's this famous moment where Princess Projectra, after Nemesis Kid murders Karate Kid, essentially, she grabs Nemesis Kid and she kills him in turn. And she says, look into my eyes, churl. Now, this is a proof that comics teaches you new words, that your vocabulary can be, you know, improved, advanced by comics. Because I learned the word churl from that comic. But I probably read it earlier, but I didn't know what it meant, because that was when I was mindful of new words. But I probably read it in this comic first, because I must have read this Cage comic long before I read that Legion of Superheroes comic. So here's another use of the word churl over and over again by this terrorist. You'll die for assaulting a sergeant, soldier. Blow! Wow, this guy would make a mean linebacker. He tackles Luke, punches him repeatedly. But Luke, baby. Crack.
And the guy, retreat.
Luke follows him and then tackles him into this abandoned tenement building, and froomp, thud, ka chonk. There's this massive battle happening, and you only see this fight happening in silhouette, right, Billy? Which is amazing. And then this one lady who looks, I mean, she's obviously now probably one of the rubberneckers. She's decided she'd had enough of this fight because it might topple her apartment building. She looks like she just came from pleasuring her husband or something, because look at the sleeping guy's smile on his face. Damn. Police out in the courtyard. It's horrible. The cops show up to see Cage emerging victorious. He's dragging this unconscious terrorist out by his arm. And the cops are like, oh, Cage, you know, thanks for helping us out. They let him go, apprehending this guy. But then, Billy, what happens as Claire and Luke stroll romantically through the streets again? They see the self-same cop car pull off on the side of the road. And why? What happened?
Yeah, the doors are open and everything. And Cage shows up and they said that, you know, the guy that was, you know, like he was probably just playing possum, like he was, you know, unconscious. And then when they put him in the car, he clobbered the two cops and took off.
Yeah, exactly, man. This is some, he's a fierce fighter. The one cop even says, he's like a tiger, Cage. He's like a tiger. He clubbed us. Couldn't hold him. And then Luke says he's going to have to take this guy out. Now, he's already got the trail because the guy's footsteps, which is very distinct. It's got these hobbled boots, right? That he can follow in the snow. So he calls a taxi for Claire to send her to safety. And then he follows the footsteps of this guy. Now, Billy, fourth disguise. What do we see? What does Luke find on his way to tracking down this guy?
Good old Santa Claus there with his kettle for like the Salvation Army or whatever, asking for donations. And Luke's like, hey, Santa, you're just the man I need. You see a cat in funky vines waltz by here? And he's like, what'd you say, Sonny? I can't hear you. And he goes, sorry, I said, and then whack, right over the head, he gets knocked out.
Chud. I thought the sound effect might say that they're going to take Luke into the sewers where these horrible mutants live. Have you seen that movie, Chud, Billy?
Yes. Oh, yes.
But no, it was just the sound effect. It led him to this guy dressed as what do you call it? An executioner, an ancient medieval executioner here. And
I got a question though. His belt, holding a knife, and his knife is like right on the top of his dong. I'm like, dude,
better not bend over or squat, man, because he's gonna be castrated in no time if that happens. But he's chained up Cage, and I don't know why he is supernaturally strong, this guy. They never really explained it, but he's strong enough to take Cage on in a one-on-one fight and knock him unconscious with a heavy bell. So he's definitely stronger than a normal man by far. So then he introduces Cage to his master plan. He says that he was looking for a worthy adversary, and Cage proved to be it. And Cage is sort of the only person in New York worthy to witness what he's planned for the world. Of course, this is not just for the world, but this is another thing why this guy is somehow possessed of superhuman attributes, Billy, because his origin story that he tells Cage is he was a soldier, a spy in World War II. And after the atomic bombs were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, there were extra bombs. He dismantled one and carted it away, stole it away secretly, and then reassembled it 20, 30, 40 years later. 30 years later, I should say. So this guy's old, man. He's got to be in his late 50s or early 60s.
At least 50s, yeah.
What, did he also end up carting away the super soldier formula there? I don't know.
Maybe.
But he reassembled this bomb, and then assembled it again somewhere below the streets of Manhattan. And now he's going to detonate it with this computer he's also built called EMIAT 230. And in control of the U.S. Army's atomic bomb. Whoa. So this guy's not only a super spy, he's a computer expert. He's a bomb engineer. Whoa. He's this supreme fighter, and he's a master of disguise. Wow. But Billy, listen, it seems as if Cage is briefly saved here, because just as this guy's about to detonate this bomb on, well, as it strikes 12, the clock strikes 12 on Christmas Day, what happens, Billy? Something disturbs him. Someone coming down the chimney.
Yeah, it's awesome. So you see something. Yeah, you see some, like, you know, dirt and soot and whatever coming down the chimney, and he's like, somebody? coming down the chimney. And at that point, Cage, you know, like on the cover, breaks the chains and then grabs him, just beats the living crap out of him, and then grabs some of that equipment too and rips some of the wires out and stuff too, so he can't you know, detonate the bomb even if he would wake up. And then all of a sudden, plunk, you see some guy in a red suit fall down the chimney into the fire.
No. Oh no, please. Oh, this is just insane. This is crazy. And then, yeah, it seems to be Santa Claus saving Cage there, but Cage manages to break free from the chains all on his own. He rips the guy's clothing, punches him in the stomach. Now he's not holding back anymore. Bladow! He takes out the computer too. And then Plunk, who plummets out of the chimney, like you said, this guy dressed in a red suit. It's not Santa, though. It's a guy who's been casing this terrorist headquarters for weeks. It's a burglar. He's coming to the chimney on Christmas to rob this guy. and he finds Cage there, and he's in tears. He said, this is Christmas Eve. Who knew anybody would be here on a holiday? And then this is the weirdest panel of them all, Billy. The story ends with Cage and this burglar celebrating the dawn
of Christmas Day together. Of
Christmas Day together. And it says, it's been a hard year for Luke Cage and for the world. Both have survived. And Cage has even gotten a little more together, maybe. But the world hasn't changed one bit. Cage, he's obviously going to take this burglar in, but he appreciates the sunset nonetheless, because after all, it might have been a mushroom cloud heralding the day, right, Billy? Rather than just this pleasant Manhattan sunrise. Oh, it's great. And next, the most unexpected villain of them all.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I would even go so far as to say this villain could spell Luke's doom. Anyway.
Two issues away from my favorite Luke Cage panel ever. Oh, man.
That's right. That's going to be great.
Cannot wait.
Can't wait to get to it. Can't wait to get to it. Now, listen, we've got a bit of Christmas cheer here for the listeners as well. This episode is going to be released, of course, along with our Dragons and Jive, right, Billy, for December. But we're going to probably offer up a Christmas present to our stalwart Into the Weird listeners by taking this Luke Cage segment, if that's okay with you, Billy, as well. And we add this to a bonus Christmas episode, just the segment of Luke Cage, just to ring in the Christmas cheer come Christmas Day on our regular Into the Weird feed. So we're going to do that for everybody out there.
And just sounds like a great Christmas idea.
Let's do that, Mr. B, because this is a fantastic Christmas issue, which needs to be shared with the rest of the world.
You know what? They should have just had like one more page with Cage bringing the burglar home and hanging out with Claire and be like, let's make some breakfast for this burglar. I can only imagine her face when he walks in the door with this idiot.
That's right. Let's treat this burglar like Tiny Tim, because after all, Cage is displaying his Scrooge-like tendencies too. I mean, Scrooge, after he reformed and became all generous. Cage has been very generous during this issue.
Yep.
So, yeah, you're right. Fantastic issue there, Billy. My favorite of the discussion that we've had today. And that's it for our Into the Weird post-Christmas special. I hope you weirdos out there enjoyed it. Billy and I certainly did. Every time we record a Luke Cage snippet, it's a lot of fun. And, of course, we love him in the Bronze Age, but also beyond that. It is blaxploitation, though. So we know that there's sensitive content involved. We by no way mean to offend anyone. But it's almost as if he's a caricature of something that never really existed back then, because nobody spoke like that. It's a complete fictional exaggeration of something that the white writers at the time thought existed and in fact did not. So Billy and I, though, were big fans of the movies, the blaxploitation movies and so forth that came out of the 70s. And we're fans of Luke Cage, not because of blaxploitation, but because he is a fantastically unique character in his own right. And he's weird. I mean, his issues, especially in the early Bronze Age, were perfect for Into the Weird. So I will definitely drop another snippet in the future sometime of a different topic or comic we discuss on our Patreons, just to tantalize your taste buds for more terrific content. And I just want to thank the following patrons for making our patron possible, our Patreon. And they are as follows. Ryan Daly, one of our staunchest supporters from the Fire and Water Network. Thank you, Ryan. Brian Hansen. Scott Rowland, Slangword Scott, of course. Gary Arkell, he recently guested alongside me on the Long Box of Darkness. Ed Moore Jr., thank you, Ed. Steve Cronin, Gord Talton, Ranger Gord from Prairie Justice, a vigilante podcast. Spindrift Games, one of our newer patrons. Thank you, Spindrift. And of course, Bill from My Astral Form. Thank you, Bill. He's on Twitter and a staunch supporter of Into the Weird. Lowbrow Ephemera One, one of our newest patrons. We want to thank you, Lowbrow Ephemera, for signing up. We hope you've been enjoying it so far. And we promise to give more quality content to you guys in the future. But for now, thank you, weird listeners, for giving Into the Weird a chance and helping us to make the show great. You don't have to support us on Patreon to do that. You just have to listen to us, engage with us every now and then if you want to, and you can do so by sending emails or sending DMs on Twitter. Our email address is, of course, sinkintotheweird@gmail.com, and on Twitter we're at intotheweirdbelize, at @BellyD_licious. I'm at @DarkLongbox, and please feel free to contact us over there. We'll always make time for you if you're, of course, suitably weird, which most of you, I'm sure, are listening to the show. So with that, I finally want to just thank all of you for joining us on another comic-filled jaunt into the weird. Happy New Year, everybody. Bye-bye.